Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, where we cover trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world, our communities, and bring them a mental health perspective.
Hello, I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and I'm joined today by Dr. Aaron Elmore, a psychologist whose practice focuses on children, on teens, and also young adults. Erin is based out of San Diego, and she's also one of our test prep experts in the broader Triad family. Erin, it's really nice to have you here with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you. Hey, you know, today we're talking about juuling and marijuana and its impact on teens and on young adults. Marijuana use we know about, with you having some work in this area and some familiarity and expertise, but I want to talk about juuling too. Juuling is kind of a new feature in our lives. So as we start the conversation, let's just start with defining some things. What is juuling actually, and how it differs from what we might be familiar with someone using or smoking a joint of marijuana, let's say? How is juuling different?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. So juuling is a specific type of vaping. So really it's under the umbrella of vaping, which is actually a form of smoking nicotine, whereas marijuana would be smoking the active ingredient from the cannabis plant, often known as THC. There's also CBD in it, which we'll break down in a minute. So if you hear somebody talking about juuling, they're really smoking nicotine, and it's a type of way of vaping. So juuling and vaping, you can kind of use interchangeably. Juuling is just a specific type of device that's been really popular lately to vape. So it's like an electronic cigarette, basically.
Okay. As we talk about juuling and marijuana, we know just from the CDC that they say the smoking rates have fallen, kind of lowest in the U.S. ever for right now, last couple of decades. And they're reporting about 14% of adults are smoking cigarettes at this point. With regards to folks vaping and marijuana use, what's happening with the rate of the use of both of those at this time?
Yeah, well, it's interesting with the history of juuling. I think that may help explain. So juuling was originally created to help people who were active nicotine users, active smokers, to reduce smoking cigarettes because of a lot of the harmful substances already found in cigarettes, like tar and some other things. So I think that's why they can say there's a huge reduction in maybe cigarette smoking, but a huge influx in juuling or vaping. So it's a quote unquote healthier way to get the same nicotine, but obviously nicotine is problematic, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So as far as the rates, what we know, you know, especially targeted towards younger individuals for vaping, it's so pervasive among middle school, high school, and soon to be young adults, because it is addicting. So the high schoolers are going to become young adults. We're going to have a whole generation that's really addicted to vaping. So in 2017 to 2018, vaping actually increased 78% among high school students and 48% among middle school students. So there's another stat that says that currently it's affecting 27.5% of all high school students. And that's just vaping alone. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty significant. Out of curiosity, what are some of the marijuana stats right now that we know in terms of high schoolers, young adults? What's the uses there are we finding?
Yeah, so it seems like the numbers have been fairly stable over the past few years. So there's not a huge increase in marijuana use, but it's still concerning. So some stats say 10% of eighth graders smoke marijuana, 26% of 10th graders, and 37% of 12th graders report using just in the past year. So it's still a significant amount, but it's not this new popular thing like vaping or juuling is. And another interesting stat is I think teenage girls are smoking marijuana, perhaps more than boys. I don't know why that might be, but you know, it says that more teen girls use marijuana than cocaine, heroin, ecstasy, and all other illicit drugs combined. So smoking marijuana has become, I think, a fairly popular drug of choice among our high school students.
Right. It's such a early introduced drug, isn't it? Or the vaping in this case, it's introduced pretty early. What are some of the reasons, if we're talking to parents right now, if we're talking to educators, what are some of the reasons that young people are smoking and vaping? What's drawing them to this?
Yeah, I think a big reason for both marijuana and vaping is there's really this misconception out there that it's a safe or a quote unquote safer alternative to other drugs. And of course, we can argue that it's much safer to juul or smoke marijuana than like try heroin or cocaine. So in that sense, yes. However, it's actually not that safe. And so I think teens and young kids are very misinformed about these two substances. The history of vaping, or juuling, I should say specifically, really kind of explains this well, I think, is that, again, juuling was created to help reduce nicotine smoking from cigarettes, and it was supposed to be marketed towards adults, but they found that there's a teen market for this, and so it's specifically actually marketed toward teens right now. The Juul itself looks like a USB flash drive, so it's very electronic and flashy, and it's easy for teens to hide this from their parents. They can smoke it in school because it looks like they're just pulling out their flash drive and like biting their thumb for a minute, and they get a quick puff. You can see in the commercials, it's kind of like marketed towards the teenagers, and obviously that alone is a problem. So from my understanding, the big tobacco companies actually bought out Juul, and so now that's why it's being marketed. Obviously the FDA has gotten involved in this, and so it's recently, I don't know exactly where the criteria is landing at this point, but it's trying to become more regulated, and they're trying to put more limits on that. But there's already a generation of kids that have become addicted because of the marketing. In addition to how it looks, they also provide fruity, sweet flavors. So the water in the Juul itself is flavored. So the teens are under this impression that they're just smoking flavored water, and they're not actually aware that there's nicotine in it. Sometimes as much or more than a whole pack of cigarettes is in one Juul pod. So you can imagine how addicting that is. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're going in with this belief somewhat innocently and naively that really puts them at risk.
Exactly. And parents don't know either because it's new, right? So yeah, so it just came on the market and it was unregulated for a while. And so a little bit of damage was done just in the addiction component. And thankfully now the FDA is looking into it. But yeah, you can see how as a teen that would look really attractive, and it's easy to hide, and clearly very addicting. So, and then as far as marijuana smoking, we do know it's addictive. So there's kind of this misnomer that it's not addictive. And it is addictive, but just not as highly addictive or as quickly addictive as some other substances. There are cannabinoid receptors in our brains, and that is what the cannabis plant is playing on when someone smokes marijuana. So those are the parts of the brain that give you kind of a little bit of a high. They influence your sense of pleasure, your memory in the moment, how you're thinking, how you're concentrating. So it can have a relaxing effect, and time kind of slows down. So you get a little bit of a dopamine high in those areas in the brain. So obviously that is reinforcing. So it's not as addicting as nicotine or some other substances, but definitely with long-term use, it is addicting. And again, here's a stat that helps explain. I just think kids are not aware of how dangerous these substances are. So 71% of high school seniors say that they don't view smoking marijuana as very harmful. In fact, they kind of have a positive attitude about it. So, you know, that's problematic. I think they're just not aware of its addictive potential.
It's really hard. I think some of these, you know, what we call gateway, oftentimes referred to as gateway drugs, or like a marijuana or kind of a vaping, they don't come in with a real appreciation for just how both addicting they can be and also just how affecting they can be. In fact, where I live, I've seen a number of youth vaping. In fact, I drove up behind a car the other day and the windows were down. I was behind this car, and all of a sudden this huge cloud of smoke came out of all four windows, front and back.
I've seen that.
And it was just the whole car was covered with smoke, and that smoke coming out the windows. Or I know one of the things that's
called hot boxing, in case our parents out there want to know.
Hot boxing, that what it is?
Hot boxing, yeah.
Yeah, the clouds coming out create kind of curiosity. So there's a lot of features to it, aren't there? They can be very addictive.
Yes, yes. And it's also kind of a group thing too. Right. So it can be a social, like any kind of drug, alcohol or whatever, it's a social thing. And so kids can just casually share it with each other without realizing they're maybe getting their friends addicted. And then they all kind of do it together. And it is hard to stop. Even if a teen finds out that it is addictive, if that's the social norm, it's hard to break that.
So talk about some of the concern about its use, not just some of the addictive components of it, but what are some of the maybe medical effects of it that could be really negative that we may want to let people know about?
Yeah, well, essentially juuling or vaping, we're talking about nicotine. So yes, it does not have the tar and some of those other really toxic substances that come in a cigarette filter. So it's a cleaner way to smoke nicotine, but it's still straight nicotine. So all the same side effects that we have with nicotine are going to be showing up with Juuls and vaping. Beyond that, the filters and the Juul are not well, they might be FDA regulated right now. Again, if there's, if that's kind of an ongoing thing right now, but the earlier ones were not FDA regulated. So there's been some concern about, is there mold in those filters? What else is in those filters that's causing issues? So obviously we don't know exactly what's in the Juul pods and the filters themselves. That could be concerning, but you know, what we know of nicotine is that it harms brain development. And we're talking about young kids here. The brain isn't really done forming till the mid 20s. So it's definitely, nicotine is going to be affecting how their brain forms, causes learning and attention issues in the long run. There are a lot of kids that end up in the hospital with severe lung illnesses and other problems related to that after vaping. So especially with COVID going around right now, that's concerning, right? Increased blood pressure, chronic bronchitis, and even insulin resistance that can lead to the onset of type 2 diabetes just from smoking a Juul.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. It's so bad.
Yeah, it really is. And it's again, it seems harmless. It just seems like a, you know, a puff of smoke out of smoking some water that's, you know, vaporized. But no, there's so much more to it.
Exactly.
Compare this with, maybe contrast this with a little bit regarding marijuana use. And we know it's addictive, but also it has some really significant, and more recently being found out, some really prolonged usage can be very detrimental in ways that we haven't seen before. Talk about some of those.
Yeah, so in the short term, some of the side effects include impaired decision making, because again, it's binding with those receptors that influence in the moment things. So impaired decision making in the moment, impaired concentration, and maybe some, you know, memory issues for a couple of days after smoking or even eating marijuana. So a lot of kids feel like that's it, because they sort of rebound after a few days and feel normal again. And so they're not going to notice the long-term effects for obviously long-term for quite a while. So I think the long-term effects are what people and teens in particular are not as informed about. So long-term, there's actually been research that shows it leads to lasting infertility effects, which that alone is huge. There's also increased heart rate, respiratory problems, increased risk for mental health problems as adults or even young adults. And also, you know, like any substance, it can lead to problems with the relationships or with the law if it becomes too addicting. So, you know, on the mental health side, though, I want to highlight that there's increased depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts in teens who smoke marijuana, which is a little counterintuitive, because you'll hear a lot like the people smoke marijuana or even use medical marijuana to reduce their anxiety. And again, if you go back to the THC versus CBD component, they're two separate items that come out of the same plant. And the THC is the thing that lets you get high. So that is the thing that we're talking about right now. That's what has the negative side effects. Yeah. But medical marijuana is supposed to have less of that and more of the CBD component. Yeah. And obviously CBD is a hot thing right now. You can actually get that on its own. So that's supposed to provide relaxation and less anxiety without the high. So that's supposed to have way less side effects. But, you know, it's quite possible that you could get medical marijuana that also has some THC in it, depending on where it's regulated. So yeah, it's definitely the THC component is what causes these problems.
What most concerns me about the Juuling and the marijuana use is that it's happening to young people. And when you're thinking about, they're trying to develop foundations in their lives, in their teens, in their early college years, when the brain's not even still fully developed. You know, we're talking about our frontal lobe not being fully developed until 23, 24, 25 or so, 26. And so the brain is still forming it. So it's pretty malleable at that time and pretty influenced by these things, decision-making, judgment, you know, planning, organization, reasoning, sustaining concentration. And these are all the things that these, particularly the marijuana in this case, are really impacting. And we're talking about kids going away to school, needing their brain cells to pass their classes and remember things and be successful. And it seems subtle, but the impact is truly significant, isn't it?
Truly. Yeah. And, you know, just navigating adulthood is stressful enough. So to add depression or growing anxiety and some kind of chemical imbalance on top of that, and an addiction to fight on top of that, that's so much stress while you're trying to figure out who you are and big decisions to make. So yeah it's tough.
So we're looking at the impact on these, then we're going to be looking at ways that we can intervene, whether it's through the educational system, whether it's through educating and empowering parents. Talk a little bit about some of the interventions that you find in terms of maybe kind of an educational approach or being mm-hmm. effective?
Yeah, so I work with teens and young adults, and in my experience, teens really do like to make decisions for themselves, and they like to be aware of their options. And teens today, this upcoming generation, actually are very concerned about being safe. So they want to make good decisions. So I think the best thing to do, whether it's through school, whether it's through parents or through, you know, cousins or an aunt or somebody, just educating these teens about what we've actually talked about today. What are the actual side effects? How is it actually not as safe as it seems? Even the history of where these substances came from and why they have been marketed to look so, you know, innocent. So I think if teens are made aware of this, it's really going to help them change their minds. Because the reality is they're going to be the ones that have to make that decision when they're out of the house with their friends, in the moment at school, in the bathroom or wherever, you know, and especially if they're already addicted, they're going to have the motivation and the willpower to change that for themselves. So I think the biggest thing is just educate and walk with the teens and the young adults in figuring out these facts, because they're really under the impression that there's only minor side effects or that this is a safer choice, but it's really not.
That's really great. I want to talk about the parents in just a moment, but you talked about really respecting teens and giving them information so they can make an informed decision about what's going to be impacting them. And you're right, we can't control, you know, our children's behavior. We like to think we can, maybe when they're younger, but teenagers yeah. can't. And ideally what we're looking to do is inspire them maybe, you know, to live healthy lives. And we can, you know, talk about some of the negative side effects. You mentioned a very interesting thing. Teens nowadays are looking to make safer choices. Mm-hmm. And the teens you work with, explain that to me a little bit more. What are you noticing?
Yeah, I think it has to do with the generational influences they're growing up with right now. So this is the generation of kids who has been sheltered for very good reason. You know, we now know that, you know, the world isn't as safe as it used to be. So it used to be kids could bike to school or, you know, run to their friend's house after school and hang out together or just meet their friends at the mall. But now kids need to be supervised. Obviously, there's a lot of unsafe things out there. So what that means is as these kids have grown up, they have been more sheltered physically, even a little bit mentally. And so they're very aware that the world is not safe. And they're very aware that there are predators and there are unsafe things. And as a whole, this generation tends to be a little more prone to anxiety. And that anxiety, I think, is rooted in them wanting to be safe and to be protected. And so I think if they realize that they're engaging in behaviors that are actually not good for them, they're probably going to be more motivated than generations in the past to stop that behavior. One of the reasons I think juuling and marijuana has been so popular is that kind of implicit message that it is a better alternative or it is safer. And I think that's why our teens are latching on to it.
I could see that. So really kind of having a little more cautious stance in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And wanting to make right choices to maybe reduce some of that anxiety and also have a sense that things are going to be okay or safe.
Right, so, right. And obviously there's individual differences with different kids, but as a whole, that sense seems to be the trend right now.
So one entry point is with the kids themselves and just providing them with information and the idea of how these things can be impactful.
Yeah.
Talk about the parents and how you come alongside them, or what some things you found that have been helpful in just educating them and also teaching them how to maybe approach their kids.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a tough thing always, because just when you figure something out, the world changes and there's a new thing to be on top of. But, you know, some of the basics are, I think, necessary for this is being aware of what these devices look like, you know, maybe even Googling some of the popular terms. So if you hear your kid come in and make a joke about hot boxing, you know, you might think they were just like punching each other, but no, they're talking about smoking marijuana. So, you know, just maybe being aware of some of the lingo and just being up to date on what's going on can be really helpful. Also, I think it's very relevant for parents to discuss their expectations of substances. Unfortunately, this needs to be happening at a younger age than probably parents are aware of or even cued into, just because kids have so much access today to these substances. So, and I'm talking even like I've had fourth graders in my office who have been exposed to a Juul. So, I think parents need to have an open conversation with their kids and explain what their expectations are in the home, if there are going to be consequences, you know, and just kind of set up that dialogue so that it can be revisited as needed.
I really like that idea of really being engaged and active parents. I think the laissez-faire leaves room for children feeling lost, feeling more vulnerable. And so I love the idea of parents being equipped, kind of empowered. You know, you're talking about fourth grade, middle school, high school, and laying down some expectations, laying some down some values that, you know, hey, in this family, here's what we really want to strive for, what's important to us, or maybe what defined us as our family system. So I really like that emphasis right there. I want to ask you more other questions, because I know you work with a lot of teens, and it's not an uncommon thing for a lot of parents to say, well, you know, if I talk about these things, my kid's going to start doing it, right? So if I start talking about sex, they're going to start having sex. If I talk about drugs, they're going to start using, right? And many other things. But what's been your experience that when parents actually bring it up and invite a conversation that's mutually respectful, what do you find happening?
I find that to be really positive. So I think it's actually a myth that avoiding a topic will keep it from happening. I definitely empathize with the parents and understand their thought process with that. But really what that ends up communicating is, in this family, that's a taboo topic. In this family, we don't talk about it. In this family, if that's happening to you, you can't come and talk to me about it.
Right.
And obviously they don't mean to communicate that, but that's what the teen is going to interpret. So I think, like most other topics, it's okay to just say, hey, this is a reality in our world. If this is affecting you, let's talk about it now. If not, I'm opening the floor for you to come talk to me whenever it is a problem or it is something that you're interested in. And that sort of communicates an openness. So the teen, it's really hard for teens to approach their parents in general. So the more the parents can say, hey, this is a safe topic to come back to at any time, that'll make it a lot easier for the teens to open up. And really, it brings up the idea of shame too, is shame is going to keep the teen from reaching out if they're in a dangerous situation and they really do need a parent to come pick them up. Shame is going to keep them from being honest, and it's going to create this kind of power struggle where the teen's like hiding the jewel and doesn't know where to start, may even not want to do it anymore, but can't stop, you know? So I think the openness can defeat the shame. And so it could sound something like, hey, we don't stand for this in our house. Here's why. If this happens, this is going to be the consequence. But also, if you're ever in danger or you ever made a mistake and you find that you want to bail out, you call me and we're going to come get you, you know? So creating that balance of expectation, but also support as they're learning how to navigate this.
Really good. So it's real clear boundaries, being very clear, very direct, assertive even. I love that you're using the word shame, because it's different than guilt, isn't it? Guilt is I've done something wrong. It's about the thing, whereas shame is more about the person.
Yes.
So often in parenting, unknowingly, we're communicating this is about you being bad.
Right.
But this is about something in you being wrong, and it's not. We're focusing on the person rather than the behavior. And kids are going to try, and we all did. We try on all kinds of things that we're growing up. But if we can get some guidance and some parenting around this and keep it shame-free, it's not about them being bad or wrong per se. It's about some of the decisions that are going to be consequential and concerning.
Yes, yes,
so
yeah.
I really like you bringing that piece in from the parental part as well.
Right. And I think the silence is what makes it easier to turn into shame, because, you know, the guilt is a conversation of, hey, that was against our rules. That was bad for you. That was a bad decision. And here's how you can fix it. Or here's what you can learn from it. But if it's left silent, the child, and most of us would assume, oh, I have messed up. I am messed up. I failed. I am ashamed, right. You know, and that's where shame can kind of creep in. Yeah.
And I think it's a good point too, because, you know, a lot of the parents are going to go, oh no, what does it say about me?
Of course. You know, yeah, of course.
So the teens are going down one path and the parents down another path. They're both afraid. They're both unknowing, and trying to facilitate some of the conversation like you're suggesting, even with crafting some words for us, which I appreciate, because sometimes all we need are just the words, you know, once yes. We get the words, we can kind of go from there.
And that leads to another thought I had too, is sometimes you need an outside person to help with this, just to find those words. And so in this situation, it can be very helpful to find a teen therapist to help if you feel like you're in over your head and you're not sure how to talk about this with your teen. That's normal and totally understandable. So sometimes just, you know, getting outside help to help that conversation and have another pair of eyes on what your teen is doing and have someone else to talk through those things with can be really helpful. Because also, not always, but sometimes there's a reason why the teen or the young adult is turning towards substances. And so you want to find that out. And I mean, we know how teens are, you know, they don't like to talk to their parents all the time about those things. So if you have a suspicion that your teen is depressed or anxious or went through a loss and then this substance you started, you know, you want to get to the root of that to heal it so that that can be motivation for them to let go of the substance use as well. You know, yeah. So looking into the why behind why they're doing it. And sometimes they just happen to be in a rough situation and they accidentally get addicted. That happens all the time. But if there is something underneath it, you'll want to dig deep and really let your team know that you care and that, you know, they don't have to turn to substances for that.
I really like that. Usually it's for a reason. And parents, when they get afraid, and it's a natural thing, they want to go right to trying to convince the teen not to do it. And that comes with sure. judgment, potential shame. But you're encouraging, if parents can kind of bind that fear and suspend that fear just long enough to say, hey, honey, can we talk about this? And can you help me understand how this came into your life? What it's about? Maybe what's it in the service of? Oftentimes the teens, just from that invitation, that conversation, begin to kind of take a look at what they're doing.
Yes.
And they begin to self-correct on their own, not
exactly.
because they're being forced to, but because they're being joined. Maybe core issues are being addressed, an invitation to a healthier lifestyle is being presented. And so it can be very different, can it, when it gets to be towards understanding and meaning-making rather than a judgment and a control to stop.
Exactly. That's so much harder to do than it seems, but yes, it's possible.
It
yeah, and this is also, depending on how emotionally mature your teen is or young adult is, this could be a good conversation to start having some adult-to-adult dynamics with your child, where if there is a history of addiction or substance use in the family or in the parent's personal history, you know, within reason, it might be okay to say, this is why I'm having such a strong reaction. Here's what I'm trying to spare you of. And, you know, teens seem like they don't care too much about that, but they really do listen and they really do take it in. So, you know, use your own discretion with that, but it can lead to some interesting conversations as the teen gets older.
I would love to come back and talk with you at some point on another podcast just about parenting, because it's very clear that you are encouraging and challenging parents to parent boldly,
mm-hmm.
really boldly, lovingly, assertively, invitingly, boldly, unafraid, via good communication, working towards understanding. I would love to talk more about that, because that's, I think, something societally we really need right now. That's
mm-hmm.
what allows kids to feel safe. That's what allows children to, in their young adult years, learn more about themselves, who they are, through that relationship right there. And it's hard for kids to initiate it. Oftentimes, as parents, we're waiting for the kids to initiate it with us, thinking we got to give them their space. But kids
right.
so love, every teen I've worked with, whether it's been inpatient or outpatient, have so wanted their parents to approach them.
Yes.
And just
yes.
get something going, get the ball rolling. And so that's what you're, so I'd love to come back and talk about that someday, just to how maybe to parent boldly and confidently. So maybe we can kind
yeah.
of do that together. I'd like
I
that.
I would love that. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Hey, before we go, I want to just toss out to our listeners some resources that you'd recommend, both whether it be for teens, parents, educators. What are some resources we can reflect on, go check out, that would be helpful with juuling and also with marijuana use?
Yes, yeah. So just know there are tools and programs out there to help reduce addiction in general, but also with teens or young adults. So you can do, you know, some basic research you could probably find. There's text coaching, which is really attractive to teens because they get text throughout the day to help them remind themselves not to juul or not to smoke. You know, there's different types of therapy. One's called self-management and recovery training. So there are a lot of programs out there. If you do a little research, you can find one that seems to be a good fit. But additionally, I want to share that the Health and Human Services website, hhs.gov, has a lot of information about these topics. Specifically, there's a facts for parents to know about reducing marijuana use. So that's a good place to start for that. Also, a good resource for vaping, just some basic information about juuling, vaping, how to talk to your teen about it. sunshinebehavioralhealth.com. That's an organization and that's one of their specialties. So sunshinebehavioralhealth.com/vaping. And also, this might be a fun resource for teens or young adults as a conversation starter. There's a really good Netflix series called Broken, and it's a 4-part series. They go over different things in the world that are broken or kind of messed up. But one of them is specifically about vaping, and it's fascinating. It's a documentary. They interview teenagers who share their experience. And I think this would be helpful definitely for parents who want to talk to their teens, but it could be a really cool conversation starter to watch it with your teen or your young adult. So I don't know how long it's going to be on Netflix, but as far as I know, it's still on there. So it's called Broken, and you just look for the one on vaping. Yeah.
So Haren, thank you so much for being with us today. I so appreciate you bringing to our awareness and understanding vaping, juuling, and just the use of marijuana and how it is so prevalent in our young people, and how we as parents, we as educators, we in the mental health field can become more equipped in our understanding of this, as well as ways that we can really pass this information on to the students themselves, the young people themselves, and also their parents. So thank you so very much for joining us.
You're so welcome.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
It's great to be here. Well, folks, thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next time on Triad's Behavioral Health Today.
Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Triad Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.